Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
For another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we have a little bit of a different episode for you guys today. Our QB1 JR had to hit the road traveling to a wedding. So we brought in a new Southern silky smooth voice to replace the one and only JR today. We brought in our man, Tim Brown. Tim, say what's up to the people, man.
Oh, man, got some big shoes to fill today, man. I'm going to try my best, though, you know.
Yeah, we know you got this.
Boring, man, but, you know.
And then, as always, we have wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. Miles, what's happening?
I'm on my way to the wedding, too, so I'm in the car right now.
Well, everybody traveling this weekend. And Mr. Saxy Prince, only a little late tonight. What's cracking, yeah. Yanker?
Only a little. I was here probably about a minute after, so I'm good. But
like,
I got a question for y'all. I got a question for y'all real quick. Just run real quick. Name your favorite non-NFL sports athlete.
Think of all time?
No.
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear what you said right there. Are you saying, like, favorite athlete of all time that's not in the NFL or what?
No, who your current non-NFL sports athlete is, your favorite one right now.
Well, Miles, we know yours, but you want to go first?
Wait, how do you know mine? Mine retired.
He ain't current.
Go ahead, though.
Current athlete, Miles. Go ahead, man.
I got Dwayne Wade and Sidney Crosby. Okay. I don't want to hear nothing, though, about hockey, because I like hockey. We play hockey up here in Minnesota, so it's what we do.
Hey, man. Like, it can't be Sid for me, because, you know, the hometown team is currently playing those Penguins, so.
I'm rooting for them, too.
So Sid is the number one enemy for everybody in Ottawa right now, so it can't be Sid. Current non-NFL athlete. I think most fun to watch for me is probably Steph Curry when he has it going. I don't think there's another athlete that I probably want to watch more. It's
Team
just
light
fun.
Skin.
Team light skin.
There you go, Miles. There you go. How about you, Tim?
Hey, I got to give it to my man Russ, man. Russ Westbrook, man. What he did this year, probably one of the most exciting people to watch. You know, I got to give it to him, man.
It's like JR never left, yo. All right,
I didn't even get one. Yeah, I got to go. You know I got to go. I would probably agree with you. For me, Jason, is either Steph Curry or it's probably Karl-Anthony Towns. I love watching him play. I got to see him actually face Steph Curry at a basketball game late last year. So it's one of those two.
All right. Well, now that we got Yinka's traditional random question out the way that none of us were able to prep for. Jump into the news of the week, OTAs. Vikings fans are hype after a day of anguish and angst where the beat writers were not in practice on day one and Vikings Twitter was upset not getting those clips that we needed. And then it happened. The skies opened up. And the Vikings official account blessed us with the video. Yinka, we will kick it off with you.
Yeah.
You know, keep it brief, though. What were your thoughts? Because we know you are the captain, the president, the prime minister of Team Teddy. What were your thoughts when we saw the video, saw the video this week?
I'll keep it brief. You know, I was super hyped. Obviously, being able to see Teddy again on the field throwing the football. I mean, I've seen clips and stuff of him throwing and, you know, maybe taking a drop back and stuff. But this is what I wanted to see. This is actually when I wanted to see it. I didn't want to see this for the first time in training camp. So I think the timing of it all was good. And that actually made me go back and watch, you know, my highlight video of Teddy just to, you know, kind of have all those feelings kind of come back and see him flourish. I do think that he's quarterback. So again, it just kind of brought back all those feelings that, you know, maybe I shelved for 9 months, but brought them all back. Got my key out, opened the lock. It was great.
Awesome. How about you, Tim? What were you feeling? What were you thinking when you saw Teddy dropping back in slow-mo?
I mean, first and foremost, man, I think I'm with everybody when you say, you know, it definitely gives you chills. It's a surreal moment. You know, it definitely puts into perspective as far as all the work he put in to get where he's at. I mean, I think the video shows you he's a lot farther along possibly than people realize, especially with the fact, you know, he just got, you know, permission to move side to side now. You know, I know he's still got a long way to go, but, I mean, that was a surreal moment for real. So I think it definitely gives everybody a little bit of faith. You know, he's pushing to come back. He's not going to roll over. I'm excited to see where it goes, man.
Awesome. And Miles, how about you? Let's try this one again.
Yeah. Oh, my call doesn't drop again. But yeah, like Tim said, you know, he gave me chills. Like, you know, when the injury happened, you kind of think, am I ever going to see him in a Vikings uniform again, you know, wearing his helmet and, you know, in the two gloves, you know, and being able to see that those videos of him throwing to his teammates again, I think, you know, it was exciting. I loved it.
Awesome, awesome. So the next thing that most of us, and, you know, we have a, you know, group message that we've had ongoing for a while here, kind of after the video came out of the initial kind of thoughts of the chills and the, you know, the hope that Teddy would be back and all the excitement, really all of us had the same first thought, which is, man, this is kind of messed up for Sam a little bit that they'd be using Teddy on kind of day one of OTAs to sell hope to the fans and all of those things. Yeah, what do y'all's take? Like, why did they do that? Why did they release the video? Why Teddy first? And what do you think this kind of thing could do to, like, the Vikings locker room, fan base, et cetera? I'll start with you, Tim. What do you think, huh?
I mean, personally, man, I thought the same exact thing, you know, because you're going into the season, you know Bradford's going to be the quarterback, but it puts so much uncertainty, not only around Teddy's knee now, but now, you know, how's the locker room going to do? You know, like you said, you got guys who are big Teddy supporters in the locker room as well. So as far as why they put the video out, I'm not too sure, man. I mean, maybe for a possible reason, you know, a large possibility of reasons as far as, okay, maybe, you know, they want teams to know he's farther along than he is. Maybe the fans, you know, as far as what we're going into next year. Let's just say for some odd reason, you know, Bradford balls out and has a great year, teams can go back and realize Teddy was this far along last year, you know, at beginning of training camp. You know, I think it shores up a lot of doubts that there were. I also think it was funny that they did it in the way they did. You know, oh, we're going to release the video on, you know, when the media is not there. And then, oh, he's got a doctor's appointment now all of a sudden, you know, when the media is there. So it's still a lot of uncertainty, man, but I think it can potentially cause some conflicts in the locker room going forward.
How about you, Miles? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, a lot of what Tim said is kind of in line with what I was thinking, you know, kind of like, you know, your first reaction is like, because for me going into it, I was like, there's no way they're going to be, you know, even if Teddy's around the team, I just don't see them kind of like making him a feature part of their like highlight videos or anything like that. You know, I thought they'd kind of keep him hush hush, and for them to just kind of throw him out there and have that, you know, that personal video for him, it kind of blew me away a little bit, just kind of, you know, in shock, kind of like normally they do like kind of the opposite. Like I kind of compared it a little bit to the Adrian Peterson comeback, you know, from his ACL in terms of, you know, they kind of kept him hush hush and out of everything for a while early on, just because, you know, he was still in the middle of the rehab and everything like that. So I didn't expect to see them feature him like this, but at the same time, I think, you know, part of it has to do with that. It sounds like for him to be on the field, it was part of his like rehab process. So it sounds like it could just be they wanted to get it out there so that, you know, people aren't questioning, you know, he's at practice now. Why isn't he at practice, you know, when, you know, during training camp or whatever, you know, what comes down in the next few weeks, you know, in the next month or two, you know, why he's not doing more then. Compared to now, I think they just kind of wanted to stay ahead of it as like this is part of his rehab process. So he's working on certain things, but he's still limited. I think they just wanted to stay ahead of it instead of all the, because, you know, they're going to get a whole bunch of questions because people are going to see that he's there and he's participating. So just try to stay ahead of it, it sounds like to me.
All right, all right. And so, Yinka, this is going to be a two-part question. So same question for everybody else, but also, what did you think about, you know, why they released the video? And then kind of a follow-up, what did you think about your man Jarius Wright's comments kind of about seeing Teddy and how he brought it? And even some other guys, Adam Thielen and others kind of commented like, this ain't nothing new. You know, we've seen him doing this for a minute now. Like, what was your take on the whole thing? And what's your take on how the players reacted to, you know, the public getting caught up on what they've already known?
I mean, I think I talked about this on our last pod. I think something that you realize with the NFL is their primary goal year in and year out is to sell hope. Selling hope boosts ticket sales, right? And not that the Vikings were struggling to sell tickets, but I mean, I would not be surprised if the amount of people who bought tickets between, you know, Tuesday when it was wreathed until now has spiked a little bit. So I think the point was to drive in hope, like, hey, this guy that we spent a first round pick on, the guy that fits so well in everything that we need in a quarterback, you know, having the kind of choir boy persona, having the generally good person on and off the field, and having a guy who had, you know, we use the word potential, but you're really starting to see him grow. They had to put forth that message that, you know, he's not dead. He's still around. And I think either Miles or Tim alluded to it, but just control the narrative that was, you know, all these videos and stuff. Teddy was already putting out these videos. He's been putting them out for a few months now. So I think the Vikings got to a point where just like, you know what, it's better for us. It gives us more leverage to certain contract situations to pull forth that we have confidence in this guy and that we want him to be our quarterback of the future. Because I think part of the reason why Teddy kept putting out his own videos was like, hey, you know, I'm still alive. I'm still a great quarterback. Teddy does have this kind of cold, you know, quiet confidence in himself, which is why you saw all these videos coming out. So I think the Vikings really wanted to start to control that narrative that he had already started, you know, maybe a few months back. And as far as the players, I don't think it is a secret that the players love him. And it's not a take a shot at Sam at all, but I think it's very clear that this team supports Teddy. But they following Sam because he's going to be the quarterback. So, I mean, I don't feel like there's going to be necessarily this rift. I think it's more clear that there's more people who are on Teddy's side than there are on Sam. I don't think there's very many people who are Team Sam, Team Sleeves. I think there's more people in that building.
Oh,
let's
boy.
Let's not make this a Teddy versus Sam thing just because at the end of the day.
No, I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm just trying to say that, like, you know, quietly within the organization, I think there is maybe a – you know, a message or something that's being out like, hey, we want Teddy to be that quarterback of the future because that's what he was supposed to be. And because this injury.
But there's still so much unknown. I just think it's more so like with the players thing, like the players aren't just going to play less hard for Sam Bradford because they know Teddy's coming back rehabbing. I feel like kind of, you kind of made it sound like the, you know, like there's that potential rift, which I just don't think there is. Like, the players understand it's a business. They understand Teddy still might not come back. Like, just because you saw a few clips of him practicing during the OTAs doesn't mean, you know, he's going to be back in 6 weeks for training camp and be ready to go for, you know, week one. Like, that's not the reality. I just think it's I just want to make sure, like, that narrative, it's still Sam, technically Sam's team for this season. But I totally understand what you're saying, that, you know, long term, a lot of the players and maybe potentially, you know, the front office, they view Teddy as the long-term answer, but we just need to see him get there first.
Yeah, man, and before we go too deep this Teddy-Sam kind of tangent, I think Yinka touched on a couple points that were actually pretty interesting in there in terms of potentially other reasons that they maybe were releasing this video in terms of, you know, Sam Bradford's agent is known to be, you know, one of the more aggressive negotiators in the league. And he's been known to kind of put that pressure on teams and front offices out there to, you know, like the article that I think came out in Monday Morning Quarterback, like Sam Bradford's one of the few guys who's never really had to ball out, but continues to get lucrative deal after lucrative deal because his agent is kind of a boss, right? So, you know, with Teddy being a complete unknown and, you know, people being unsure if Teddy was healthy, you know, not healthy, whatever was going on, what was going on with rehab. What do you guys think about the potential that Rick and the front office decided not only to get out ahead of the narrative, but also to use the, I guess, the public goodwill that you get from this Teddy video as, you know, kind of leverage in negotiations where, like, Sam Bradford can't put as much public pressure on the Vikings when you have kind of that ghost or that idea of a healthy Teddy kind of looming out there for the future. I guess, Tim, what are your thoughts on that, man?
I mean, you pretty much hit it right on the nail on the head, man. I mean, I think they went ahead and they put it out, the video out there, to show that they're still behind Teddy. You know, Sam's the guy, they're still behind Teddy. And like you said, it's leverage for them, man. I mean, let's say Sam has a heck of a year and, you know, now you got two different options. You got a healthy Teddy, you got Sam's going to acquire a good amount of money. I mean, let's be honest. So in his mind, you know, the best option for him would be, if he had a successful year with us in year two, would be to stay in Minnesota long term. Now, is that the best option for the Vikings? We'll find that out after this year. But as far as, you know, you, like you said, you got that ghost in the background waiting, and he's itching for every opportunity he can possibly get to get back on the field. Now, he's shown that. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be interesting. I think that's going to be pretty much the narrative of the season as it goes on, because you're going to have everybody, you know, every time he makes a mistake, you're going to have people pushing for, oh, Teddy, you know, he's in the wings. So I think it's also going to push Bradford. I mean, he knows that. So he's pretty much sink or swim for him, man.
Yeah, man. And Yanka, I see you over there. I know you've been anxious to jump back in here for just a little bit. And one of the things that kind of happened after, you know, the – I won't say the excitement died down, because there's probably still a little bit of excitement floating around, even though Arif's video today might have taken the spotlight a little bit away from everything. but there's still some excitement. But then kind of the next thing that happened after the kind of the Teddy excitement was, I guess maybe we'll call it, like, a little bit of a backlash with folks kind of, you know, calm down, it doesn't change anything. And I know Sam over at Vikings Territory, he wrote a really, really good piece. But you had some takes in terms that piece and your thoughts in terms of how it all tied back in with Teddy.
Yeah, no, I definitely encourage everybody to go over and read Sam's piece. It's absolutely phenomenally written. But yeah, one of the things that Sam had wrote in the very beginning of the article was he kind of talked about how, I've talked about this before, how people tend to look for things that obviously, you know, further confirm their own bias towards, you know, a player, or why they feel like a player is better or not as good. And I think you can find that regardless. But I think he did mention a point that those who look for those confirmation biases, like, they further try to dig into things like advanced stats and metrics and stuff. And I know he obviously wasn't trying to take a shot at anybody who enjoys those things, but I kind of liken it how, you know, how fans are as anything when it comes to even listening to music. You know, there's a reason why pop music is so so popular. You know, it's if you look at it musically, it's simple, it's catchy. There's not very much acoustically you have to access within yourself to really understand the music. It's just there for you to enjoy. And I kind of liken that to how a lot of people, they look at box scores to kind of understand you know, the music that is football. But for me, I'm very much a, you know, I'm an old soul, I'm an old school kind of guy. I love jazz music. And jazz music, I know a lot of people don't like it for the simple fact that it is a lot more complex. It is a lot more Shakespearean, in which it's a lot harder to understand what those musicians are actually doing. But if you were to break it down, you really get the story of what's happening musically with what they're trying to do. And I kind of liken that to, you know, a lot of the advanced stats and metrics that we see, which further, you know, I don't truly believe stats can really tell the entire story. They tell a lot of the results. That's why I love watching film, but I think a better job telling even more so of that story and what's actually happening on the field versus just, oh, well, Teddy threw for, you know, 14 touchdowns in a season, or he threw for, you know, 150 yards in a game. So as far as to, you know, bring it home, it's just like that, the differences that I get as far as when I communicate with people on Twitter is the people who love talking to me about the volume stats and stuff. And like, that's great. But I think it would be more beneficial if, you know, we start digging in more so in some of these advanced metrics so we can, and stats, so that we can, you know, maybe further understand what's exactly going on. So it was a point that I thought about when I read Sam's article, which again was very.
Yep. And once again, shout out to Sam at Vikings Territory. That article was outstanding. If you haven't read it, please make sure you go and do that now. And before we move off the topic of OTAs, because, you know, obviously this is the first time we've seen the whole team back together, so we're going to overreact about everything that we hear, everything that we see. Before we go and damper that down too much and move on to some other topics, Miles, I want you to tell me what you are overreacting to the most. What highlight clips are you seeing that have you the most hype coming out of these OTAs so far?
I mean, we already know the answer to that one. I'm excited to see Laquon Treadwell. I just think
Laquon,
he's coming. It just excites me, like, because, you know, I'm just starting to see, like, even from these, you know, few clips that there are of him, you see more of a confidence to him. Even, you know, going against guys like Xavier Rhodes and some of those other, you know, Terrence Newman, any of those guys, he seems more comfortable. He seems more confident in what he's doing. So, you know, I'm pretty hyped about, you know, to see how he does in training camp. So that's probably my guy for sure.
Is anyone's answer not Laquon Treadwell? Yeah, anyone?
No. Well, I mean, for me, it's Laquon. It has to be Laquon, but okay, I could probably talk about another guy.
All right, so we'll go to Tim then.
I mean, personally, man, I'm kind of more disappointed about who I haven't seen yet, but it's possibly a good thing. I mean, we haven't seen much of Mackenzie Alexander, so – you know, you haven't seen a highlight of him getting, you know, passes completed on him. You haven't seen a highlight of him making interceptions, you know. So it's a lot similar to his situation when he was in Clemson. He wasn't flashy, didn't have a lot of production, but he was solid. So maybe, you know, the fact we haven't seen any clips of McKenzie is a good sign.
That's a really great point, because that is, and I tweeted it today, that group, the DB group, is the group that I wish I could have just eyes on the entire off season to see how those boys are progressing. And one of the things
I could just picture it, Jason, yeah, just watching Trey Wayne's like a hawk.
Oh, well, I mean, we've seen him a couple of times in these videos, right? So, you know, while you've been watching Treadwell ball out, I'm like, oh man, that's Trey Wayne. He just got Trey again. Like, oh man. But, you know, not really transitioning. We got Tim on, and Tim has been doing a really, really great job on Twitter, going a little bit deeper into things, giving some explanations in terms of, you know, why a guy like Treadwell maybe developed a little bit more slowly than we would have liked. And so, you know, with this being a pro Treadwell pod and me, I figured we'd let Tim get into it a little bit and kind of expound on those thoughts that he let out there on Twitter in terms of Norv's system and some of the other things going on with Laquon that maybe slowed him up a little bit, and why we should have some hope for him going into to 2017.
I mean, yeah, no doubt. It was, you know, definitely one of the most disappointing rookie seasons for a receiver. But, you know, people always see the end result, but, you know, you don't take into consideration what really happened. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 20 years old. He comes from a spread offense. Comes over and has to learn Norv Turner's offense, which is, I mean, you look at it and you just see Japanese writing. I mean, it's ridiculous. But, you know, as opposed to him, where if he would have landed somewhere else, you know, he could have landed into a more friendly offense. So then you had the speculation that, you know, he was never really fully healthy. You know, so my thing was, you go into the season with Teddy as your quarterback, knowing Treadwell's in the wing, trying to learn. All of a sudden, Teddy goes down, Sam steps in, and now you're trying to go ahead and incorporate what Sam's familiar with. So now you're combining two offenses, you know, into one system. You know, trying to get Sam up to speed in the meantime, trying to learn this. So you're not going to, and the Vikings were in a critical situation as it was. They're not going to go ahead and sit there and throw him out when he's not ready, knowing damn right well, you know, he's got to, you know, combine offenses, combine terminologies, you know. So you're not going to see any success, any receiver come out in the, you know, under those circumstances and have a successful rookie year. Now, down the stretch, you know, I was surprised we didn't see him come in. I know you had guys banged up, this, that, and the third, but, you know, I think he's going to be the biggest benefactor of going to Schumer's West Coast offense. Especially, you know, if he can make that leap as a receiver, you know, especially with his, you know, run blocking skills, et cetera, you know, they'll be able to move him around all over the field, you know, outside, inside, you know, wherever. So it's good to see him make these strides already, you know, in camp. I know it's camp, you know, and whatever, but, you know, these are things you weren't seeing last year. Last year around this time, you were seeing guys, you know, criticize him and Zimmer talk about how, you know, he's not in the right spot. He's like, he's got to learn this, he's got to learn that. Whereas opposed to going into this offseason, all you heard is praise, you know, from Zimmer, Spielman, you know, Schirmer. I mean, you got, you know, you definitely get excited when you hear things like that.
You just said something there that actually, with as much time we spent talking about Treadwell, with Miles yelling at me for slandering him and comparing him to CFL All-Stars, you just mentioned moving Treadwell around and putting him in a lot of different spots. And that's not really something we've dug too deep into. I guess, you know, I start with Tim, but, you know, Miles or Yanka, either of you feel free to jump in. Given that we understand, like, Laquan Treadwell's game will probably never be about getting a lot of separation, where do we think the best place for him to play is, for him to win and succeed on a regular basis?
Well, you know, in the West Coast offense, you're gonna constantly, you know, see guys motion around, create mismatches, you know, this, and it's more of, you know, Norv's system was based on spreading the defense out vertically, you know, throughout the first, second, third levels of the field, versus the West Coast offense, you're spreading guys out thin east to west. So, and when you got a guy like Sam, it's one of his, you know, one of his more greater attributes, I'll say, is ball placement. You know, so it's going to work in his favor having Sam as his quarterback right now as he learns nuances and stuff like that. But when you're talking about him moving around, I think, be honest, and it sounds funny because it's not traditional. Normally you got a short, you know, shifty guy at slot. I wouldn't be surprised to see him play a lot of slot, man. I mean, especially third and short yardage and stuff like that, man. Have him run, you know, across the field, little things like that. And I mean, and another thing is when he's in the slot, he can seal the edge for guys, you know, running the ball. So I'm excited to see where that goes, man.
Makes a lot of sense. And Miles, I know you were trying to get in there anxiously. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think moving a guy around in any offense, I think the biggest thing you want to be able to do is you got to understand concepts and you got to understand what everybody else is doing in your positions, you know, running routes. So, you know, if he's running from the slot, he's got to know who's running, you know, what routes from every other position so that he understands, you know, to fully understand an offense, especially as a receiver, you got to know what every other receiver is doing, you know, receiver or tight end, running back. So then, because when you have an understanding of that concept, you can play freely. You can play comfortably. You're running there with confidence because you know what your job is and exactly what everybody else is doing. So you know why you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. But not to get into all that, I do think it'd be great to be able to see him, you know, line up in the slot against a smaller corner or, you know, be able to – I know guys like Hoodie or you were going to say, like, you know, mismatch against a linebacker, but he's a mismatch against a linebacker. I don't care what you say. With his even you know, with his 4.6 speed, he's still a mismatch against a linebacker. And so I do think it'd be good to be able to move him around and get him into favorable matchups for him. And like to Tim's point, you know, being able to help and seal that run game, you know, from the slots, really important too. So and then real quick too, I want to just make a quick point. I think the term separation gets used incorrectly by some people in terms of what they expect separation to be in the NFL, because it really is terms of inches for separation in the NFL for wide receivers and is in terms of, you know, slight hesitation, slight movements or anything just to get open, just that slight inch or two is the biggest difference. So I think, you know, when people see like the catch against Rhodes yesterday, they're like, oh, well, there's no separation there. Well, but at the same time, he had inside position. He had the position he needed to be in to make that play. So there's big subtleties and differences for I think people kind of misperceive what separation really is, especially in the NFL when they expect to see like a 3 or 4 yard difference, when in reality it's really only that you're really seeing. So
that's a really good point, because I think oftentimes what ends up happening when we talk separation, especially when we're going to be evaluating a guy like Treadwell, like the technical aspects of route running kind of get, you know, lumped in or interchanged with separation. And like you said, for a guy like Treadwell with his style, separation isn't necessarily going to mean the same thing as it does for a guy like Diggs and his style. Like for a Treadwell, in the way that he's played throughout his entire career, separation really means, you know, that subtle nudge to get himself a little bit of space so he can go up and make the contested catch, versus a guy like Diggs, whose separation is more about him getting to the stem, you know, using a head fake to get the DB turned around and then coming back and making that catch without as much as much of a contest from the DB. Right. So I guess in this context, it's more he's never going to be a burner who's just running by guys. For him, separation is really going to be about that, those subtle things he can do to create space, like a DeAndre Hopkins or guys like that.
Exactly. And that, I think people, the nitpicking of St. Treadwell, like gain separation, like you're not going to see it like to your point, which is really great, is you're not going to see that like you do in like a Stephon Diggs or, you know, the Antonio Browns of the world. That's just not his game.
No, I think you're going to see a whole lot of him, you know, trying to use his body to box out. Yep. You know, he's got a big frame. You know, that's why another reason I like him in the slot, man, because like you said, going against those smaller corners, man, it could work.
Definitely.
What you thinking, Prince?
If I can jump in. if I can jump in real quick. I mean, just liken it to basketball, right? I mean, in basketball, you don't have – the best basketball players know how to create very little space. He just, like – inches to be able to shoot your shot. And I mean, if you watch Treadwell back at Ole Miss, you know, separations has never been a thing that he's needed to succeed. He's always succeeded on, you know, obviously that big frame, the ability to kind of be that basketball player to box out when he needed to, win them 50-50 balls. Like, that's been the game since Ole Miss. So to criticize something that he really has not been very good at, or, you know, his athletic ability doesn't allow him to, you know, I think it's kind of a, you know, misevaluation. We should kind of start evaluating the things. Let's look at what he did well back at Ole Miss, and let's see if he's continuing to do those things. But the second point I wanted to touch on was something that Tim was actually saying that I never even thought about. You know, obviously throughout all of last offseason and stuff, you know, Treadwell was working with, you know, Teddy Bridgewater. And Teddy, you know, you've heard enough stories about Teddy as far as, you know, he really wants all the receivers and everybody else that's on the field to succeed. And that includes, you know, making sure they line up right, making sure that they're thinking as far as route running, all that stuff. And I think that that type of, you know, teaching that he was able to provide for Treadwell was different than the teaching that, different than what Sam did come in 8 days before the season started. So, and if anything, Sam was too busy learning his own stuff to be able to be that kind of guy that, you know, I'm not saying that Sam would never have done it, but Sam's, you know, the way that I'm thinking that he was going about his game is, I need to make sure I get my stuff right, and I make sure that I can know exactly what wide receivers are going to be. I don't really have time to go about teaching people. I just need to execute. For someone like Treadwell, who might not been doing things right all the time, you know, Bradford just got used to, like, he might not be in the right place at the right time to look for a guy like Diggs who can consistently get open, or you know, Adam Thielen or even Kyle Rudolph and stuff. So that's why I think that maybe that transition from quarterbacks did hurt Treadwell even more so. And I never really thought about it until Tim talking about it. I mean, it's just an avenue that, you know, I would like to actually go back and watch some of those, you know, see what was well doing this season, you know, that might have contributed to him not succeeding as much as he could have.
All right, so we'll transition away from Treadwell with the last point that I'm going to make is, you mentioned basketball players, and Treadwell being compared to a basketball player. You know, those dudes can normally jump, though, Yanka. So I don't know
don't
if that's
do this. Not all. Don't do this.
Not all of them.
Don't do this.
Nah, but I figured I'd get Miles charged up with that one before we transition. But really, what I really wanted to say is my point there was it feels like every time Yanka is given – it's like JR when we made him say something nice about Sam. Like even anytime Yanka goes in to say anything about any player, he somehow finds a way to say something nice about Teddy that is like a subliminal shot at Sam. And you know, well, Teddy, you get guys lined up in the right place. It's always making sure he's helping all the receivers.
No.
Sam did that for all that stuff. So, you know.
Oh, you call that a sandwich, man.
I even made it the point to say that it's not that Sam wouldn't have done that. It's just that, again, are you going to learn from a guy who has been in the system for a while, like who's taken the class before? Or are you going to learn from the guy who's on his first day, just like you are?
We know what you meant, Yanka. It's all right. It's okay. But, you know, you'll be happy because transition to talking about something that you love, maybe almost as much as you love taking subliminal shots at Sam Bradford. And that is the running back position. So Tim tweeted. I don't know. It might have been a week ago now. Who knows? He was tweeting about the Atlanta situation and kind of Devontae Freeman and what he's been able to do and the stats that he's been able to put up and the fact that he still doesn't have that long-term contract. I wanted to get Tim's thoughts on kind of on that whole thing and then maybe have a discussion about running backs in general, bell cows versus running back by committee, and maybe have a conversation philosophically about whether we really should be paying big money to any one running back based on everything. So, Tim, it was your tweet that kind of got us to throw this on the show sheet. What are your thoughts on kind of what's going on in Atlanta and maybe even Pittsburgh with Lev, where they haven't really committed to him long term and many consider him to be the best or second best running back in the game?
Yeah, and to be honest, man, I was pretty shocked when I saw the numbers as far as, you know, what do you got paid per yard? I believe that's what the tweet was on. I mean, to me, the man's proven himself. If he's in your long-term plans, you should have already extended him. I don't see, you know, things changing too much for him as far as going forward, you know, the loss of Kyle Shanahan. You know, they did bring in Sarkisian from Alabama. The main thing you're going to see different in that offense is you're going to see more of a man blocking scheme versus a zone blocking scheme from the O-line. They like to run the ball a lot outside. I think you're going to see a lot more downhill running. So I'm not going to say, for instance, it's going to take, you know, Tevin Coleman out of the game, but I think you're going to see a little bit slight more Freeman this year than normal. So personally, I think as far as, you know, if you want to keep those guys together, you got to make, you know, Coleman understand he is RB2. So, you know, if he's in their plans going forward, at some point you got to make the extension. You're disrespecting the man. I mean, you got to pay him. As far as Le'Veon though, man, that I'm really surprised by that because you're going into a situation where in the future, you know, next year you might not have Ben. So he is that much more important, you know, to the success of the next guy coming in. You know, whether it be a rookie, whether it be, you know, I don't know, Sam, Teddy, who knows? I'm not going to go there. But anyway, you know, and if I'm Pittsburgh, I was really surprised that they didn't try to, you know, hop on any of these guys and try to develop them going forward. You're going to need a guy like Le'Veon to take the pressure off them. I mean, those guys are that much more, you know, important. As far as paying, you know, top running backs these days, I'm not in the business of forking out AP money, you know, but if you've got a guy who can, you know, work all three phases as far as catching the ball, running the ball, pass blocking, you know, your David Johnson, your Le'Veon Bell, you know, you don't need that running back by committee. You don't need, you know, three, four guys to contribute. So them, I'd say, you know, you give them that $8 million, maybe possibly up to 10 frame if they're lucky, you know, whatever. But I think you're seeing more and more of, you know, guys just finding gems left and right. You know, GMs are digging deeper. The running back group is – or running back position's getting a little less, I guess, critical in the draft. But I think going forward, you know, you're going to see your occasional guys like, you know, possibly even Ezekiel Elliott, even though I'm pretty sure that majority of his yards came from the offensive line. I won't go there neither. But, you know, I feel like anybody can run behind that line. So that gives him a little leverage on his future contract, you know, down the line. But, I mean, like I said, man, you gotta have a running back you trust. Not going to put the ball on the ground. Devontae Freeman, you know, he's shown that. So I feel like at this point, you just got to step up and extend him if he's in your future plans, man.
So Yinka, I know that you have some strong feelings on this. So very quickly, give us your thoughts on kind of the Freeman situation, the Bell situation, and kind of just the idea of, you know, paying that running back big money. Go.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of touched on a lot of it, so I don't really have to say about it. But I'm for paying running backs, especially because, I mean, we have spent time and time again over the last 2-3 years paying mediocre quarterbacks to just get their QBs in more trouble. I think it'd be more beneficial for them if they at least had a weapon on the backfield, whether he can do all three. If he can do three phases, that's just, in my opinion, that first helps the development of young quarterbacks as well as mediocre veteran quarterbacks. So, I mean, as far as a running back by committee versus bell cow, like Tim said, if you have a guy who can contribute in all three phases, I don't see any reason to have to go and get, you know, another guy. I mean, obviously because of the longevity of running backs, I see why you want to spread that out. But I mean, if you already have a guy who's that effective in those three phases, you know, you might as well just get another guy. And then as, you know, he's in his half-life, essentially, go find your new guy. You know, I do think that you can work with some of these guys in, and, you know, that eliminates the tread on the tires for maybe the new guy who you're going to end up bringing in later in the career of some of these running backs.
All right. And before we go to Miles, I guess I just want to throw in a bit of a counterpoint because, you know, I'm on the other side of this debate in that running backs are important. The position is still important. So I don't want it to be misconstrued that I think that, you know, the position can be eliminated or running the ball isn't something that has value at certain points in the game. But we know it's the position that gets hurt most frequently. When we take an example of a guy like Lev Bell, I mean, I don't know that he's played a full season yet, be it, you know, injury or off the field. And when he's missed time, the next man up is able to step in and produce at almost the exact same level because Lev is in a great system. You know, Pittsburgh's offensive line doesn't get talked about in the same breath as Dallas and Oakland, but they got a pretty good offensive line there too. And they have Antonio Brown, and they got Ben Roethlisberger, and they had Martavis. Like, that system is set up to where it almost doesn't matter which running back they get in there. If they get a guy with the skill set, he's going to produce because of the environment that he's in. And then you have, you know, Atlanta. I mean, they probably will pay Devontae Freeman. It looks like they're going that way. But if they can't figure it out, they drafted Brian Hill this year. And like Tim said, with the way things are going in the draft, good running backs are available later and later. You look at this year, Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon were both considered consensus first-round talents, and they went in the second. And this happens every year at that position. So I don't know. I look at what Jerry's doing in Dallas with Zeke, and I know the assumption for most of us is that Zeke will be a Cowboy for life, but it almost looks like with the number of touches that they're giving that man, that their plan is to use him up. Yeah, they're going to use him up and let him go, you know, because – our offensive line is the thing that really makes this thing go. Like Tim said, anyone we bring in here, like Darren McFadden was putting up 4.6 yards per carry against that offense with that offensive line the year before Zeke stepped in, right? So if they know that they can get almost anybody with some talent in there and get 4.6 yards per carry, but what that means is that they need to pay those big boys up front. I just don't see why you would potentially take resources out of kind of the engine of your entire offense to pay a guy at a position that's most likely going to miss time, and in Zeke's case, doesn't even play on third down. So, you know, that's where I'm at with it. Well, Yinka, I know you want to jump back in. Hold on one second. We got Miles over here just kind of chilling for a bit. Okay. So let's let Miles hop in and then give his take on the
whole thing. I'm just enjoying my drive. So, for real, I really do think I'm kind of on the fence on both sides just because I do think there are those outlying running backs, you know, the David Johnsons and the Le'Veon Bells of the world, because those are the guys, they're the premium elite running backs in the league right now. Especially for me, I think, you know, I take David Johnson, kind of put his own echelon, just because you're not going to get the off the field issues from him like you do Le'Veon Bell. So that's a big investment you're giving to a guy like Le'Veon Bell when, you know that he's probably going to get suspended at some point, or, you know, he's had some injury issues. So I'm kind of on the fence on that. I think David Johnson's like one of the only guys right now where I would pay top dollar to keep. But in terms of, you know, overall, I'm kind of on Jason's side in terms of that the running back by committee, in that sense that you can like look at the Vikings. I mean, we haven't seen them all three factor in into an offense yet, but Latavius Murray, Dalvin Cook, and Jerick McKinnon, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but combined they're all making, it's under 10 million. It's gotta be under that, even like closer to 8 maybe, in terms of how much all three of those guys are making. And you can get a committee in terms of in that style of offense, and use those running backs in the right, correct ways and keep everybody fresh. So I'm kind of in that line of, getting more to that in this fast paced offense, and then using each running back and keeping them fresh so that you're not wearing guys down, especially later in the season, when you need guys in the playoffs and, making pushes toward the playoffs. So I'm kind of with you on that, in that sense, Jason.
And Tim, I saw you there looking like that you wanted to hop in. So we'll go you first and then let Yinka kind of bring it home, because I know that he's got some.
Let's not let Yinka go back. Let's just ignore it. Move on.
Yo, Tim, what do you got to say there, man?
Yeah, man, I mean, I'm definitely with you guys as far as, you don't want to pay these guys, top money, especially given, like you said, with Pittsburgh's line. D'Angelo Williams comes in and didn't miss a beat, So I'm definitely with you on that as far as not paying them. I think typically if your offense goes through them, then yeah. But like you said, if you're going to take money away from your offensive line and stuff like that, who's getting – should get most of the credit for the success that they're having, or the system, or so, however that might be. And then you touched on, them drafting Brian Hill. Then you got Pittsburgh drafting James Conner from Pitt, hometown guy. So I think they're trying to see, what guys they can bring in as far as what their options are before they pay them out. How are these guys going to come in? Can they contribute? And then he touched on, our whole running back group. I think I looked at it and they were making close to $9 million collectively, and that's huge. I also think that personally they have the potential to be, I saw the other day they're talking about the best running back duos in the league. I think that we might potentially have a chance to have the best trio, So, and if all that for $9 million, I'll take it.
Yeah, man. And Yinka, I see you over there chomping at the bit. What you got to say, man?
No, I mean, it was only to a counterpoint to what you were saying. And I mentioned before is, obviously all the places that you mentioned that had a good offense line, a lot of them had a good established quarterback. Sans Dallas, who, they hit gold with that. And like I said before, if it's a place where it is a younger quarterback, maybe a mediocre quarterback, I'm definitely more okay with shelling out that money for that running back, especially during that, that window where you don't know what that quarterback is going to produce for you.
But wouldn't Minnesota – And Adrian Peterson's career, and then like Detroit, for instance, with Barry Sanders' career, wouldn't those kind of be the counterpoints to that? Like, and I know we've talked about it, and I dug in because you kept yelling at me on Twitter about it, about the running back helping the passing game, or helping the rookie, or helping the young guy out. And when we went back and kind of looked at the All-Pro running backs and then the passing games that they were associated with, there wasn't really any sort of a statistical correlation between having a great running game and that corresponding to you having a more efficient passing attack. So I know that that's something we say a lot, but I know Arif and other people have dug into it, and it's usually formation that dictates what the defense is going to do more so than just the one guy that's in the backfield. And so I guess that was kind of my counterpoint to that. Like, if you have two Hall of Fame running backs and between them, well, they maybe had one or two playoff wins without Brett Favre, it's tough to say that you can really build that team, that contending team, that team that can actually win something deep in the playoffs by building it through just a running back.
And I think my last final counterpoint to that, and I don't disagree with some of the findings as far as that, But I think my last counterpoint is, you know how I've always said it is, the Vikings, sans Teddy Bridgewater and Brett Favre, have never really had very good competent quarterback play. I do think that there is at least a threshold that those quarterbacks need to reach to actually see the effect. And I think it was the case for Barry Sanders. It's not really my generation, but I think as far as AP, having to go through all the quarterbacks that he's gone through, the Matt Cassels, the Christian Ponders, Joe Webbs, you know, DeVar Jackson and stuff, I think that the level of play that we were getting from those quarterbacks was, I don't want to just say bad, but it was just so below average so consistently that the effect that he might have is almost neutralized. So,
it's funny that you brought up Tavares Jackson, because I learned yesterday that Teddy and Tavares were very similar quarterbacks. The internet told me that.
I didn't hear what you said. What?
I'm saying the internet told me yesterday that Teddy Bridgewater and Tavares were very similar QBs. It was very strange. You learn a lot of things on the Twitter.com, you know?
You learn a lot of things.
I guess before we move off this discussion and kind of wrap things up for tonight's pod, I guess were any other points or counterpoints that Miles or Tim you wanted to make in terms of the running back discussion, how it should be handled, how teams should approach it? I will take that silence as no, or somebody on mute.
No, I was just going to say real quick, I think it was kind of exciting too to see today, and I know it helps that Latavius Murray's not practicing right now because of his foot surgery, but Dalvin Cook getting some reps at the ones is kind of a quietly unknown, or not unknown, but like untalked about thing, just because the earlier he can get reps with the ones, you know, the more acclimated he can get with that offense and, you know, with guys like Sam and the offensive line and, you know, who he's working with. So I just think that's kind of an underrated thing to think about.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And you know how I feel about Latavius. I feel like his best use will be in kind of taking on that Asiata role.
Yeah.
The two guys I want to see on the field are Dalvin and Jet as much as possible.
I'm excited for Jet, to be honest. I've said too, I think they should use him more in like in a receiver role than they should out of the backfield in terms of like running the ball. But I'm sure that I don't really know what their plan is for him, but I think they should use him more as like an offensive weapon in terms of that instead of just a running back. But we don't need to get into that.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them actually use some two back sets where you got Latavius Murray coming in pass block and you split, you know, Jet out wide or in the slot, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Little things like that. I mean, it's definitely gonna be a running back by committee. That's no doubt about that. But like as far as we're talking about, you know, the running game helping out the pass game, you know, it doesn't per se as far as, you know, statistically, but I think it's the little nuances you're gonna see is, you know, you're not gonna see, you know, the D line pin their ears back and pass, you know, or pass rush. You know, these guys are gonna have to sit there and they're gonna have to stick to their gaps now. Little things like that. So let's say this offensive line doesn't get any better in pass protection. If they can run the ball, it will ease it up a little bit, you know, and that's why I think I like the transition to the West Coast, because you're going to see a lot of zone blocking. You're going to see a lot of running to the outside, you know, a lot of one cut, hit the hole, let's go, you know. So and that's why when they drafted Dalvin, I mean, God, it couldn't have worked out any better. I mean, it really couldn't. He's the perfect fit for what Schumer's going to try to do. So –
yeah, man, you're preaching the choir over here in terms of the love of the Dalvin pick. Yeah, I guess that should wrap us up. I think we got a good little episode in there. Yinka figured out his audio there towards the end, so we apologize for that. But like Yinka always says, it wouldn't be a podcast unless, you know, he did a little something to make things a little difficult for us.
If I'm not ruining the podcast, it's not a podcast. So
that is true. That is true. That is true. So before we head out this evening, what do you guys have on the go? What are folks working on? I know that the things are a little tough since, you know, both Tim and Yinka now are going to the public library together to use the computer. What y'all got on the go over there, man? What's y'all got computers yet? We type in, or are we working on the phones to get these articles up and running?
Working on the phone, man.
Nah, I got fortunate, man. You know, my wife, she's got her own computer. My laptop decided to go haywire on me, man. So, you know, I was going to release my first edition of Breaking the Bank, you know, breaking down a lot of, you know, Vikings offseason and additions and stuff like that. And then in the process of editing it, it decided to go haywire. So I'm redoing everything again on the wife's computer, man. So hopefully sometime this week we'll be straight.
That's what I'm talking about. Miles, you got anything going on other than the driving away from the Twin Cities and getting drunk here?
Oh, man. I'm you know, I think the biggest thing I'm working on right now is just finishing planning my wedding. So, I'm working on some stuff. But it's taking a little longer than I would hope. But, this wedding plan is really hindering a lot of what I've been doing. So.
Okay, and that's the next contest we have coming up for listeners of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. Next person to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating gets a front row seat at Miles' wedding. Your wife doesn't listen to the pod, does she?
No, she probably will, but, you know, free drink, you know.
And, definitely don't look at the fine print where I say that that everything I just said was not true at all. I don't want Miles' lady coming looking for me. So, I got nothing else. We'll go ahead and get the theme music rolling in the background. I want to thank our man Tim for coming in, stepping in, making sure we had adequate levels of Southern swag on this week's show. So, thanks for coming out. We'll have Tim on again, no doubt. Keep your eyes peeled, your ears ready for Tim's upcoming pod. Yinka, stay up, my man. Be on time to the next place you're going. And Miles, drive safe, bro.
I'm already late.
Appreciate it. Well, you gotta take it easy. All right, y'all. Yes, have a good one. Down.